You have put a new song in my mouth. A song of praise. A sound that resonates, that all of heaven and earth may worship you. We tread the hills to meet with you, to see your majesty in all that surrounds us. For it speaks and displays the eternal God of ages, creator, author, victor. In love, you established an everlasting covenant with your people, and it's your love that captivates us. As children of the King, we rush in as waves unrestrained, overcome, overwhelmed, that the King crowned in glory and splendor would reach down to place a crown upon our heads. So we raise our banner, the banner we boldly stand under, the banner of Jesus Christ. From dusk to dawn, from age to age, your praise resounds in all the earth. Deliverer, Redeemer, ruler of an everlasting kingdom that cannot be shaken. We trust in the name of Christ Jesus, the only King, forever.
Welcome to Zion's Redemption Radio. This is Fundamentally Mormon. I'm your host, Mark Lichtenwalter. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. You can find this at blogtalkradio.com/fundamentallymormon. And the text will also be posted on my Facebook wall at facebook.com/LAZURUS1977. You can also find the text and the audio to this radio program on iTunes at Fundamentally Mormon and in the different Facebook groups that I am an admin of. Some of those groups are LDS Last Days Prophecy and Gospel Discussions, LDS Gospel Mysteries, Latter-day Unity, and others. You can find the pages that I admin also on my Facebook wall. And if you enjoy this program, please friend request me or follow me and make me one of your close friends. We try to put out as many episodes as we can during the week. But I'm thankful for you to be here today. Let's get right into the reading. Today, we are going to be reading out of Ogden Kraut's books. You can find his books for free to read online at ogdenkraut.com. That's ogdenkraut.com. That's ogdenkraut.com. And today is the 14th day of April 2021. We are continuing on with our reading of Holy Priesthood Volume 4. We'll be in Chapter 6 today, and we're going to talk about Islam and polygamy in Islam. We're on page 44, which you can read at ogdenkraut.com, and the chat room is open for people who have questions or comments about what we're reading, and then I will open up the phone lines at the end of the reading. If we have any callers, I'll take questions. I have only read a few books on polygamy. Hold on here. My wife is calling, and I got the phone in the window because I'm trying. Hold on here a sec. Okay, Kim, you're live on the air.
Great.
Anyway, I was just telling the audience that I've only read a few books on Islam, so I'm not really familiar with it. And in my life, I've met people who are who practice Islam, but I've only known two personally. One guy from Chicago that I knew back in when I used to be in Job Corps, and So that was a long time ago. That was 94 to 96. And then another friend that I had was actually a Mormon fundamentalist that believed the prophetic calling of Joseph Smith, but he converted to Islam while retaining his belief in Mormonism somehow, which is weird because Muslims, they believe that the Prophet Muhammad was the last and final prophet. And it's really interesting because, a lot of people don't know this about Muhammad. He actually had a red beard. And the only reason I know that is because many years ago, I had a man, I think it was in 2014, who flew out from Philadelphia because he used to listen to my radio podcasts back then, and he knew my claims, and he wanted me to baptize him. So we went up to Murray, Utah, and baptized him in the Jordan River. And I asked him why he believed my claims, and he said, well, because you fit the description of the final prophet. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, it's in the Dead Sea Scrolls. So I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. So I went and found the Dead Sea Scrolls, but in my research to try to find the Dead Sea Scrolls that speak about the final prophet, I found out that one of the things that the final prophet, the prophet of Qumran, saw a vision of the final prophet, and he said that he would have red hair. And so I was like, okay, red hair. The prophet Muhammad actually was a redhead, which was like, I thought he was like from Arabia or something. Well, he may have been from there, but that's not where his ancestors came from. So anyway, another thing about my Mormon fundamentalist friend, he just passed away last week. And he was a very stubborn but very knowledgeable individual. And I used to love debating him, but sometimes he would make me want to pull my hair out because he drove me nuts. But I loved listening to him, and I loved talking to him. So we'll... Okay, this program to Robert Ray Black. And people who are in fundamentalism, unless they're in one of these cults that, like the FLDS or whatever, a lot of people know who Robert Ray Black was. And just a week and a half ago, he was joking around with another friend, Dwayne Hafen, about being an old donkey. And I was joking around with them, and I'm going to miss Robert. I am happy that he has passed on to the next world because he was in extremely poor health for a long time, and he was cooped up in his single-wide mobile home up in Clearfield for a long time and couldn't do much, and so he's not in pain anymore, so I'm grateful for that. But I will miss the knowledge of that man. And anyway, so, Tim, before I get into the reading or dedicating the program, did you have anything to say before I get into any of that?
Nope.
Okay. Yeah, have you ever known anybody who's Muslim?
Yes, when I was in high school, I did. I went to a high school in Montgomery County, Maryland. So I went to mm-hmm. school with everybody, like all the different everything. Yep.
And you lived there because your parents were working in the government and your mom she worked at the Holocaust,
ICHEIC, the International Exchange for Holocaust Claims, something and something and. Yeah.
Yeah, so you you ran into a very diverse group of people in Maryland.
Yep.
Because everybody worked for the government there, and they were all rich.
I suppose.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll dedicate the program, and then we'll get right into the reading. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Father, we thank thee for the atoning sacrifice of our Savior, Yeshua, HaMashiach, or Jesus the Christ, that we may learn through the experiences that we have in this life, and that when we stumble and seek to overcome our flaws, that we can be forgiven of our sins, that we may have thy Spirit to be with us, that we may come back into thy presence. We love thee, Father, and we ask for thy blessings to be upon us as we study this important topic of Islam and polygamy. We ask thee, Father, to accept us as thy children as we come to thee with broken hearts and contrite spirits, that we may be molded into the tools that thou would have us be, to be thy servants, and to bring forth Zion's redemption. And we say these things in the name of Yeshua, our Messiah, even Jesus the Christ. Amen. Chapter 6, The Islam's The Polygamous Solution in Arabia. By definition, Islam means the Muslim religion, a monotheistic religion in which the supreme deity is Allah and the chief prophet and founder is Muhammad. Webster's Dictionary, 1984 edition, page 747. Muhammad was born in Arabia and lived from 570 AD to 632 AD. It says BC here. I might have to call Beverly and have her correct that, because he actually lived after Christ, not before Christ. And he taught about Jesus. And so I believe that the Prophet Muhammad, that the things that he taught were corrupted by later clerics that added things to the things that he taught. So not everything about the Prophet Muhammad in the Quran, I don't believe the teachings are pure from that man. So I don't accept the authority of the, well, I don't accept the authority of the Bible, or because it's been mistranslated throughout the years, but I don't accept the authority of the Quran either, because it has been tampered with, just like all scriptures are tampered with. Even the Book of Mormon's been tampered with. So whether or not Muhammad taught certain things, I guess we'll learn about those things in the millennium when things could be more pure, but I don't believe that everything that comes out of the Quran is truly from God. So, and I think Robert Ray Black probably believed that too, because he knew that Joseph Smith was a prophet, but in the Quran it says that Muhammad is the last and final prophet. And that's why I found out about Muhammad and his red hair, because in my research to try to figure out the Dead Sea Scrolls and the prophecy of the prophet of Qumran and the final prophet, he talks about the red-haired prophet as the final prophet. But he gives a whole bunch of other details in the Dead Sea Scrolls, and they are all very interesting. And it's interesting because Muhammad actually had red hair. He may have been born in Arabia, but his lineage was not from there. Most Muslims feel, however, that the beginning of their religion actually went back further than that. They claim it is a restoration of the original religion of Abraham. The terms Islam, Muslim, or Mohammedan are used somewhat interchangeably. Another thing about I'm not going to worry about that. We're on page 45. I'll just continue on with the reading. We actually do have a lot of reading to do today, so I need to keep my comments down to a minimum. Islam means submission to the will of God, also submission to their prophet Muhammad and to the Quran. The Muslims consider the Quran as containing the very words of God himself, and they are extremely careful to preserve its content. There is probably no other book in history, including the Bible, that has been so much studied or commented upon as the Quran, states the American Encyclopedia of 1995 edition, volume 15, page 494. It is also most interesting that within this Mohammedan Bible that these people hold so sacred are instructions for living plural marriage. The translation of this verse reads, and this is Quran 4:3, and I can't remember how they say their words for their Suri 4, verse 3, I guess. I can't remember. It's been a while since I've studied this stuff, so I hope you'll bear with me and forgive me for not knowing. If you fear that you shall not be able to deal justly with the orphans, marry women of your choice, 2 or 3 or 4. But if you fear that you shall not be able to deal justly with them, then marry only one. And that's from the Quran. I'm just going to say chapter 4, verse 3, because I know that I think it's Suri 4, verse 3, but I can't remember how they say it. Anyway, and later from the same book, quote, and they ask for your instruction concerning women. Say, God does instruct you about them, and remember what has been rehearsed to you in the book concerning the orphan women to whom you give not the portion prescribed, and yet whom you desire to marry, as also concerning the children who are weak and oppressed, that you stand firm for justice to orphans. There is not a good deed you do, but Allah is well aware of it. Holy Quran 4:127, page 146. Aluddin Shabazz explains this very verse by saying, orphan does not merely mean those who have lost their parents. In the Quranic terminology, it means those who have lost shelter, protection, etc. Those deprived by death of one spouse, the impoverished, etc. Polygamy, a remedy or a right in all Islam, by Shabazz, page 10. When Muhammad was 25, he married Khadija, 15 years his senior, and for the next 25 years, he was not inclined to plural marriage, even though he had been offered beautiful women and riches by the Meccans to desist from his missionary activities. His small band went into 5 battles, during and after which he saw the devastation to families resulting from war. It was after the Battle of Uhud that the men were allowed to take plural wives, solely to remedy to the sorrowful plight of the widows and their families. The revelation on polygamy. Quote, was revealed after the Battle of Uhud, in which many Muslims were killed, leaving widows and orphans for whom due care was incumbent upon the Muslim survivors. And quote, Islam in Focus by Abid al-Ati Hamad, page 103. page 47. In such situations, polygamy is more of a solution to a serious problem than an exploit of women by sensual men. Saddam Hussein wrote that the monogamy is the food which sustains society. Polygamy is the medicine of the disease of the monogamous society. End quote. Wives of the Prophet by Hussein, page 71. And Shabazz makes this interesting observation. Hold on. Eliza, get away from my food. Kim? Kim?
Yeah.
Can you tell Emmett that he needs to make Eliza some scrambled egg sandwiches because she wants mine, and she is whimpering like a puppy dog.
Absolutely. I'm actually headed right over just to the local grocer because I was at the house, but we didn't have any more soft shell burrito thingies for you.
Okay.
And he already has all the stuff made for tacos right now, so she could technically go downstairs and he has everything ready. But
Eliza, go downstairs. Okay, love you.
Yeah. And then you want to eat a tomato like an apple, right?
Absolutely.
Because I got some fresh vine ripe ones, so okay.
Nice.
Yep.
Okay. I'll just continue reading here. In earlier times, many Arabs, including those who became Muslims, took great numbers of wives and treated them very badly. Came a restriction upon the number of wives permitted, probably to make the men appreciate their wives more. Saddam Hussein said, after the restrictive injunction, the Muslims retained four wives and discarded the surplus for better protection and their rights. End quote, Wives of the Prophet, page 69. There was a recognition of certain wrongs in the living of polygamy, but there were greater wrongs in the system of monogamy. Some of the purposes of plural marriage are more clearly seen among the so-called heathen nations than among those who claim to be so enlightened. Many of the Islamic people show more genuine consideration and respect for women than do those of our own American Christian nation. Alauddin Shabazz wrote, and we're on page 48, and I just have to say this before I read this quote. Hold on. Eliza, what do you want? Okay. 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 Tell him that you want a scrambled egg sandwich.
Okay.
Tell him Dad said to make it. All right. So before I go on with the reading, like I said before, I believe that the modern-day Muslim people are being led by false traditions that were added by the clerics of the religion after the death of Muhammad. And that there are three grand divisions of Muslim religions within the world. There's two main ones, but then there's a third one as well. And I can't remember the Sunni. I can't remember what the names of them are. Like I said, I studied and the books that I read on. I've read books on every single religion that I've been able to get my hands on. But I did that back in like 2002. So it's been a while. You know, it's been a while. So my memory is a little bit rusty on these things. But my whole point is that I don't believe that every belief and custom of modern Islam is from the Prophet Muhammad. I believe that just like the Bible, that there have been many things added to the text that were not there originally. And more recently than reading the book, I listen to YouTube videos when I'm driving. And I drive 10 to 12, sometimes 14 hours in a shift. And I listened to a whole bunch of different stuff. And I listen to YouTube videos and podcasts when I'm driving. I don't listen to music a whole lot. But I will listen to different people with different points of view and different topics. And one of the things that I do enjoy listening to is different podcasters talking about Islam. So it's something I'm interested in, but like I said, I don't believe that every current tradition and belief of the Muslim people actually stems from the Prophet Muhammad. I believe it was corrupted by clerics over time, just like the Bible was, and so we'll just go to that point, and I'll just continue the reading. We're on page 48 for those of you who are reading along. The study of Islamic history reveals that polygamy came into existence simply to save the women from destruction. Prophet Muhammad's marriages were motivated by a de facto humanitarian spirit, not a sensual motive. His marriages showed the policy of conciliating the hand of rival factions, etc. Unmarried females, unprovided for, widowed women, generally with children, destitute females in general, engender a delicate situation for the Prophet Muhammad and other concerned Muslims. The problem was more than economics. They should be protected and their other human needs looked after and fulfilled. It is the duty of society to handle this delicate situation, protecting the individual dignity of those affected, as well as the moral fabric of the society. In light of these facts, it is suggested ambiguously in the Quran, a feasible alternative by relaxing the rule on monogamy, polygamy, polygamy, a remedy or a right, by Shabazz, page 14 and 15. The Islamic and other religious societies have found that in various tribes and cultures, polygamy becomes a social and economic necessity, and many of these women not only accept polygamy, but even prefer it. During the first 7 centuries AD, the Persians continued to be better gentlemen than the Greeks, and prostitution was less frequent among them than among the Greeks. Rabbi Gamaliel, who was one of the great rabbis, praised the Persian. Gamaliel was the teacher of Shaul, who became Paul, Gamaliel. So Rabbi Gamaliel praises the Persians especially for 2 qualities. They are temperate in eating, modest in privy, and in the marriage relations. So this is actually a rabbi who lived before Muhammad was alive. Okay? He's just talking about the Arabians, which is where the Prophet Muhammad actually came from. It was where he lived and where he was born and raised and where he had his experience with Gabriel, the angel, and became a prophet. So, all right, let's see here. I've got a... get something to drink real quick. All right. Polygamy was also allowed and was recommended in cases where the first wife proved barren. Persian women were exceptionally beautiful, and it is the women who yearn and take the initiative in courtship and seduction. Feminine charms overcame masculine laws. Story of Civilization by Durant, page 4, or volume 4, page 137, and I am about to throw up. So I will be back as soon as I'm done with that. I'm sorry, guys.
Door.
Okay, I'm back on the air. What was that, Kim?
Oh, I was just in the store, so it disconnected from the car, and I was like, okay, I'll just hang up.
You were on when I hung up. I just ran to the bathroom.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't eat a whole lot last night because that stuff that Emmett gave me was not right at all. In any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
And so I didn't eat a lot last night, and when I woke up, I didn't eat anything at all. But I took DayQuil so that I could try to, like, get some of this phlegm and stuff out of my head.
Yeah.
And it decided to come back up. So I just spent the last, like, 10 minutes throwing up. So it is what it is.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's fine. All right. Well, let me get back into the reading. Sorry, everyone, for that delay. Now, on the iTunes podcast, when I hang up the host line, it stops recording. And then when I come back on, it starts recording again for the iTunes. So I wasn't gone that long for them. But for people who are listening live, yeah, I was gone for a little while. But excuse me. But I'm back, and we'll continue with the reading, and I think I feel better now. So, and I did actually shove most of a sandwich into my mouth just to get some food into me. So when I don't eat, I start throwing up, and I hate it. And I forget to eat all the time, because when I'm driving, I don't have time to eat. I'm just driving, and I don't stop a whole lot. And when I'm stopped, I'm trying to get paperwork done so I can keep going because I have this really tight schedule. I have a certain number of loads that I'm supposed to get, which I never do. But I try to do the best I can with what the time that I have. So I'm just, like, rushing all the time. And my co-driver, who, interestingly enough, wanted to have a 6-to-6 schedule with his last driver, but his last co-driver didn't want that. Well, now he wants to do a 5-to-5, which doesn't really work for me. And so I'm getting cut off at the beginning of my day and at the end of my day because of the way the schedule is. So I'm just like, okay, got to hurry and do my job and do it legally and do it, like, make sure everything is – so it's just – I don't have time to eat at night, and I don't really eat a whole lot during the day. And I'm actually, Kim, I don't know if you know this or not, but so I am down to 243 pounds, which I know a lot of you guys think that that's a lot. But at one time I was over 400 pounds, so that is a big deal. And ever since I've been married to Kim, I have been losing weight. Kim. Hello? I guess I won't have her. I guess she won't testify to that. I was looking at some of the pants that I wore that I used to have, or that I still have, that I used to wear back when Kim and I first got married, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I was a big boy. And I still am. But it's mostly muscle mass now, I do have to say, and I'm lying to you, so I hope you forgive me for that. Anyway, I always tell my wife that this fat that you see is actually a protective substance to protect the muscular core underneath. So, and there is some truth to that because I am pretty strong. So, anyway, let's see here. Persian women were exceptionally beautiful, and it is the women who yearn and take the initiative in courtship and seduction. Feminine Charms Overcame Masculine Laws, Story of Civilization by Durant, Volume 4, page 137. We're on page 49 of Holy Priesthood, Volume 4. The girls often wed between the ages of 12 to 14 years old. and the boys as early as 15. The groom was rarely allowed to see the face of his bride before marriage, and the wedding never required a priest. Polygamy among the Islams was usually confined to the rich, and concubines were permitted. Polygamous women were mostly content because their offspring, their family, was a large blending of women and children. Dr. Jamal A. Badawi described the meaning of plural marriage as outlined in Islam's law. Quote, "The requirement of justice rules out the fantasy that man can own as many as he pleases. It also rules out the concept of secondary wife, for all wives have exactly the same status and are entitled to identical rights and claims over their husbands. It also implies, according to the Islamic law, that should the husband fail to provide enough support for any of his wives, she can go to the court and ask for a divorce. The verse says, marry, not kidnap or buy or seduce. What is marriage as understood in Islam? Marriage in Islam is a civil contract which is not valid unless both contracting parties consent to it. Thus, no wife can be forced or given to a husband who is already married. It is thus a free choice of both parties as to the first wife. A, she may be barren or ill and see in polygamy a better solution than divorce. B, she may divorce him unilaterally if he is married to a second wife, provided that the nuptial contract gives her the right of unilateral divorce, and that's in Ishma. And I think that's a book in the Quran, or a Suri, maybe. Anyway, C, she can go to court and ask for a divorce if there's evidence of mistreatment or injustice inflicted upon her. Polygamy in Islam Laws by Badawi, page 6 and 7, page 50. The Muslim male was all allowed to marry a Jewish or a Christian woman, but not an idolatress. Muhammad accepted polygamy to better balance the community because of the high male mortality rate during wartime, and it was an obligation for a man to have children, and each man could have four wives, but Muhammad himself was allowed to exceed that rule. Divorce was much less difficult for the woman than the man to obtain, according to the Quran or the Talmud. The Talmud was, it's Jewish oral law. Maybe that's the Mishnah. The Talmud is Jewish, though, so I don't know why they're quoting the Jewish books. But so the Tanakh is the Torah, the Ketuvim, and the Nevi'im, and that is what you know as the Old Testament. And then the Mishnah is the oral laws, and the Talmud, I think, is the sayings of the rabbis. And the Talmud is as big as the Encyclopedia Britannica, if not bigger. It's huge. But in it, you have many of the great rabbis like Rashi and Gamliel and other great rabbis in their teachings. And it's huge. It's huge. So it was written that the wife should recognize the authority of the male. She must obey her husband. Every woman who dieth and her husband is pleased with her shall enter paradise. Quran 4:35. Muhammad sometimes quarreled with his wives, but he was usually very pleased and spoke highly of them. He once said that the most valuable thing in the world is a virtuous woman. also that men should be reminded that their mothers carried them with pain, brought them forth with pain, and nursed them for months, which is one of the reasons he felt that paradise is at the foot of the mothers. Muhammad claimed to have a revelation in which he saw a paradise where blessed males would have many wives. The historian Will Durant obtained a copy of this manifestation. Quote, "It is one vast garden watered with pleasant rivers and shaded with shading trees, and blessed there will be dressed in silk brocades," I think that's clothing, "and adorned with gems. They will recline on couches and be served by handsome youths and eat fruit from trees, bowing down to feel their hands. By the mercy of Allah, there will be no speeches at this heavenly banquet. Instead, there will be virgins never yet touched by man or jinn, in beauty like the..." I have no idea how to say that name. Oh, here it is. See if I can look up a definition, but I can't using... So my phone, since yesterday's program at the beginning, it was cutting in and out pretty bad. So what I did today was I opened the window, so I've got a breeze coming in, and I put my phone right on against the screen on the window. So hopefully my cell phone reception will be better, so I don't have the podcast cutting in and out like I have had problems with. It seems like it's a never-ending issue. With as many years as I've been doing this, and the fact that we don't have sufficient internet, it's just annoying, really. It's so annoying. Anyway, this is why, Kim, I want an iPad mini. I know you hear me. And with a its own cell line, so that I have better internet to do these radio shows. All right, let's see here. "They will recline on couches..." Oh, I already read that part. "With swelling bosoms but modest gaze, their eyes as fair and pure as sheltered eggs, and bodies free from the imperfections and indignities of mortal flesh. Each blessed male will have 72 of these for his reward, and neither age nor weariness nor death shall mar the loveliness of these maidens or their comrades' bliss. Since pious and believing women will also enter paradise, some confusion might result, but such difficulties would not be insuperable, I guess, I don't know what that means, to men accustomed to polygamy, and around about them shall go children never growing old. The Story of Civilization by Durant, 4. Volume 4, page 179. Durant then added, "Who could reject such a revelation?" The Law of Islam was further clarified by Dr. Jamal A. Badawi. Quote, "It is now evident that the association of polygamy with Islam is not only unfair and biased, but based on serious misunderstanding. Polygamy was practiced, often without limitation, in almost all cultures. It was sanctioned by various religions and practiced both before Islam and many centuries thereafter. It is both honest and accurate to say that it is Islam which regulated this practice and limited it and made it more humane and instituted equal rights and status for all wives. What the Quran or the Quranic decrees amount to taken together is a discouragement of polygamy unless necessity for it exists. It is also evident that the general rule in Islam is monogamy and not polygamy. However, permission to practice limited polygamy is only consistent with Islamic realistic view of the nature of man and woman and the various social needs, problems, and cultural variation. The question is, however, far more than the inherent flexibility of Islam. It also is the frank and straightforward approach of Islam in dealing with practical problems, rather than requiring hypocritical and superficial compliance. Islam delves deeper into the problems of individuals and societies and provides for legitimate and clean solutions, which are far more beneficial than would be the case if they were ignored. There is no doubt that the second wife legally married and treated kindly is better off than a mistress without any legal rights or security. This vitality, flexibility, and farsightedness of the teachings of Islam cannot possibly be attributed to any man or group of men, including the Prophet Muhammad himself. Its secret simply lies in its divine source, God Most High, who knows in entirety what humans need, what human needs and problems are. End quote. Polygamy in Islamic Law by Bedwini, pages 10 and 11. The Quran itemizes a set of marriage conditions or rules for the purpose of making a righteous union between a couple. Number one, the prohibition to marriage. These are nearly the same as in the Old Testament, mothers, daughters, sisters, etc. So you're not allowed to marry your mother. You're not allowed to marry your daughters or sisters. Or you're not allowed, I think you're not allowed to marry the sisters of your sister, of your wife. But I could be wrong about that. I might be wrong about that because I know that that's been done, but I don't know if that's against Torah law or not. And I do believe that Muhammad was influenced greatly by the Torah. But I could be wrong about that too. So number two, that you should deal justly with all wives. There are simple stipulations between permanent and temporary contracts, which may be similar to wives and concubines. Number three, mutual love and compassion in the union. These include peace, tranquility, and sharing sorrows and joys with each other. Shacking up does not embrace these. Because polygamy is not about shacking up. Never was. But it might be in the Gentile view of things. But as far as a religious ceremony, it's not. Anyway, multiplication of the human race. Both are responsible for the divine object of bearing children and their welfare. Number five, children have the right to inherit properties of deceased parents and relatives. Thus, children should be the rightful heirs of inheritance. These rules are similar to those in the Mosaic Code and are reasonable enough to promote good marriage in and out of plural marriage. And from another source, it says, Islam permits him four legal wives on earth, which Christianity has not yet got around to doing. Islam gains strongly by reason of the revelry between various Christian sects and began to see the spectacle of Protestants and Catholic missionaries competing in the same area and do not understand how this harmonizes with the principle of the universal Christian God. End quote. Inside Africa by John Gunther. We actually read a bunch of his quotes yesterday in the last program. Hold on. I have a small little elf-looking creature by the name of Eliza. And she wants something, and I'm not sure what it is. I'm only going to be done with my food when I put it in the bathroom right there after I digest it. She's like, Dad, you can't have my food. Go tell Emmett to make you food. And what's he doing? Go tell him to make you scrambled egg sandwiches and tell him if he doesn't, then his new basement will be in the food storage room in the basement. His new room. Food storage room in the basement. Or make you some egg sandwiches with mayonnaise on them. Okay. Kim, did you just get home?
Send out the children.
Okay, hold on. Can you hear me again? Kim. I muted it on my headset with a button, but
yeah.
Kim's not listening to me. So, oh, there she is. Anyway, Kim, you're my sound engineer. You have to tell me when I'm coming across or not.
Oh.
And now you know, and knowing is half the battle.
And here comes all of the girls that are coming outside. So now I have to mute myself again.
Polygamy is still prevalent in some Muslim nations. The Quran, the Bible of Islam, officially permits the Muslim man to take four wives. Although polygamy has been practiced widely through Islam, Western Moors, which are a certain tribe of Arabians, have had their effect on Muslim society, and many Muslims consider plural marriage a sign of cultural backwardness. Consequently, polygamy is now banned or at least discouraged in several Muslim nations. End quote, Encyclopedia Americana, 1995 edition, volume 22, page 365. Most of the modern Christian nations are not interested in solving the problems of surplus women by restoring plural marriage. They are more concerned about gaining converts from each other and subjecting them to their priestcraft. They are more interested in power and money than in the miseries of widows and unmarried women. Dr. Jamal A. Badawi observed, both unmarried women and widows are human beings with needs. Unless their instinctive needs are legitimately satisfied, the temptation is great for corruption and immorality. Polygamy in Islamic Law by Badawi, page 5. We're on page 54. And I think we're going to page 58, so we've got a couple more pages. The percentage of polygamists in Arabia and other countries is usually quite small, as there are only so many surplus women and there aren't too many men who want to take on that additional responsibility. Jahan Fadid wrote, quote, all over the Arab world, the taking of multiple wives was the exception rather than the rule. In Egypt, polygamy was practiced only by 3% of the population. In Tunisia, polygamy has been banned since 1963, unquote, The Women of Egypt by Sadat, page 28. How strange that when there are only 2% of the population living plural marriage, they must make laws against such a small minority. It is evident that both Talmudic and Mohammedan laws were mostly man-made, as many statements were quite humorous and God could not have originated them. They blame Eve for her intelligent curiosity, but gave her credit for instinctive wisdom missing in the man. They said that when 10 measures of speech were given to the world, women took 9, the men 1. They requested that women beautify herself for her husband rather than for other men. Also, a woman's place is in the home, but her earnings and property belong to the husband. It seemed that gossip was common, and one rabbi said 100 women are equal to only one witness. The value of good women was that no man is so rich as a wife noted for her good deeds, and all blessings of the household come through the wife. On the other hand, it was said that a man who has a bad wife will never see the face of hell. However, let men beware of causing women to weep. God counts their tears. And quote, The Story of Civilization by Will Durant, Volume 4, page 363. Islamic teachings forbid illicit sexual relations, which is punishable by severe measures, even capital punishment on occasion. So they have reduced modern Christian corruptions of sexual sins from their society, page 55. Furthermore, people's free choice between monogamy and polygamy has solved some of these problems. To sum up, Islam being against immorality, hypocritical pretense of morality, and against divorce unless no better solution is available, provides for a better alternative which is consistent with the human nature and with the preservation of pure and legitimate sexual relationships. In a situation like this, it is doubtful that any solution would be better than polygamy, which is, after all, an optional solution. End quote, polygamy in Islamic law by Badawi, page 8. The modern corruptions in our American system are noticed and disliked by these backward nations. The more recent lifestyle of live-in marriages appear to be abominable to most of them, but Shabazz explains how this corruption has spread to their country. Matwa may be likened somewhat to the immoral trial marriage as practiced in America, live-in arrangements in modern times. When viewed in the light of the Holy Quran, Matwa is shown to be actually the same, exactly the same as living in the state of zina or adultery. A state where a man is interested only in satisfying his animal lust, his male ego, etc., throwing overboard all of the principles of permanent conjunctional values as enjoyed by Allah to Allah. Today, Allah aids us to see the evils in this. Let's see here. The man enters into matwa contract with a woman for a month. When the month ends, he leaves. He came and went. Another man comes and commits matwa with the same woman for 3 weeks. At the end of the 3 weeks, the man goes his way. Along comes a third man and a fourth man, all matwa and no permanence. Men just come and go and come and go and come and go. If this is not legalized prostitution, then what is it? Page 56. Marriage is no come-and-go game. Matwa, in contradistinction, has a built-in mechanism that gives a man the freedom and license to degrade, debase, and humiliate the member of the oppressed, much maligned sex. Further, under the travesty and pretext of marrying her for a period of time, no self-respecting woman would submit to such. End quote. Polygamy, a remedy or a right? The Shabazz, pages 41 and 42. Unfortunately, America holds up no enviable moral standard for Arabia or other nations to pattern after. Quote, wife swapping is still very voguish in certain areas in America. Shacking up is in vogue. Trying to love too was the title of a few song or of a song a few years ago, and As We Lay by Shirley Murdoch is a more recent one, both speaking of the infidelity of husbands and wives. These types of symbiosis are more preferable to the sanctimonious than a divinely structured and regulated polygamous relationship as outlined in the Holy Quran. These are the if loving you is wrong, I don't want to be right ethos. Today, sex is synonymous with love. End quote. Polygamy, a remedy or a right by Shabazz, page 4. The Islamic people have tried to avoid some of the problems and crimes that befall our courts every day and the effects that they have on society. Rape is a sordid act conducted by a demented, mentally deranged person and is common in the United States. Some psychologists say more people are emotionally disturbed today than at any other time in history. Many hospitals, psychopathic wards are crowded, and most popular psychologists today are in the psychoanalysis. All of this attests to the U.S. being a sick society. Some would even claim it is terminally ill, end quote. And that's page 53 of Polygamy, a Right or a Remedy. All right, let's see here. Page 57, so I think we have two pages left here. Most Muslims see our law system as foolish nonsense because so many criminals have a glib lawyer that can secure freedom by a technicality. Here, prostitution, rape, and adultery are only winked at, but to Islam, they are very serious crimes, they say. There is an overall increase in crime rate in the country, making the society more unfit to live in and bringing it closer towards an ultimate catastrophic end. Christianity can't handle the ills of society. That is evident. I feel like I need to throw up again. I don't want to throw up again. I'm almost done with the reading. I'll be back in a minute. Okay, I've been gone for a little bit again, but like I said before, on iTunes, I've only been gone for 10 seconds or something like that. So, let's see if we can finish this reading today before I go and throw up again. Maybe I've just got a virus or something, I don't know. Let's see here. I'm just going to start with this, and we're quoting, let's see here. There is an overall increase in crime rate in the country, making a society more unfit to live in and bring it closer towards an ultimate catastrophic end. Christianity. Why do I keep saying that? Christianity can't handle the ills of society that is evident. The Islamic approach to the problem of rape is both comprehensive and organized. Firstly, it identifies the root cause of the problem. Secondly, it seeks to isolate the factors contributing to its growth and existence. Thirdly, it proceeds to eliminate the problem in its entirety, end quote. When they eliminate the problem in its entirety, they mean to remove the offending part or the offender himself from society in entirety. Tradition states that Muhammad thought the three most important things in the world were women, fragrant odors, and prayers. Durant says, quote, some of his, speaking of Muhammad's, marriages were acts of kindness to the destitute widows of followers or friends, and some were diplomatic marriages to win an enemy. His crowded harem troubled him with quarrels, jealousies, and demands for pin money. He refused to indulge the extravagances of his wives, but he promised them paradise. Women and power were his only indulgence. For the rest, he was a man of unassuming simplicity. The Story of Civilization, Volume 4, page 172. Muhammad was a simple man that would ask no services of a slave that he had time and strength to do for himself, page 58. And I believe this is the last page. Yes, it is. So I'm going to open up the phone lines if we have anybody who wants to call in. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. And there's also a chat room for any questions or comments. And that is at blogtalkradio.com/fundamentallymormon. Despite all the wealth taken in booty and revenue, he spent little upon his family and less upon himself. He ate simple, which was quite common, such as dates, barley bread, milk, and honey. He did enjoy beer and wine. He was vain and spent considerable time on his personal appearance. He perfumed his body, painted his eyes, and dyed his hair. In character, he was nervous and sometimes subject to periods of melancholy. He was an unscrupulous warrior, but a very just judge. At the age of 59, his health began to fail, and he often had fevers. On June 7, 632 AD, after a long period of suffering, he passed on to his paradise. Durant said, if we judge greatness by influence, he was one of the giants of history. End quote. When Muhammad was born, Arabia was a desert filled with rogue idolatrous tribes, but at his death, it was a nation. He supplanted superstition with a religion based upon Judaism and Zoroastrianism. It created a people of ruthless courage, racial pride that won hundreds of victories. Even today, Arabia is a nation of power and influence throughout the world. So when I come back on tomorrow, I'll be in Chapter 7, The Hebrews, Blessings of Bible Polygamists. So also, you can go and listen to the text and read along with the text at YouTube. I posted that there on my reader program, and for this chapter, it's there. Also, the link to the video is at is on the iTunes description or the podcast description, And there's going to be three different links. One of them is for the book. One of them is for a library of books that all have to do with restoration theology. And the third link is going to be the YouTube link, where you can actually just listen to the reader program, or you can read along with it because the words are there and they're highlighted as the reader program reads them. And they're not at a very fast speed, so you can read along with it just fine. So anyway, we don't have any callers, and we don't have any questions. So, and my wife is not on the air because they did not add her after my last bathroom trip. So I'm going to just end the program today and get ready for work. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Take care. God bless. And goodbye.